Thank you, Don, and hello, everyone. Funny, these earbuds must be a little different in quality than my others because my voice sounds different to me. Like, ooh, who is that talking? Somebody else is using my mouth. We're here for the guiding light, the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I'm going to begin with a song. Hi, Jay. we're going to begin with a song. So let me share my screen. This song is called Who Are You? And it's by Wookiefoot, which I played a song of theirs this morning at the end of the weekly gathering. This is a different song. Here we go.
Question just echo, trapped in this sandcastle and needing to let go. Can anyone hear me now? Can anyone hear me now? Fanatical phone addicts lack eye contact as a tactic. Pupils glued to their screens beam out to the cybergalactic. And real life now seems so damn anticlimactic. Everyone's a stranger hiding inside higher tax brackets. I don't want my intelligence to be artificial or someone selling me it's more beneficial. So slow down ahead, this curve goes exponential with catastrophic unintentional consequence potential. Who are we now? Who are we? On the news is about Iranian uranium and how everybody loses when they're invading the Ukrainians. They're enslaving the third world natives and they call it saving them. I have the dose of my utopium to cope with pain inside my cranium. I just gotta calm down, I need more patience. But my heart just doesn't resound with the sound of technological salvation. The distance between the new nations, people on the ground and the space station. At this acceleration just seems bound for devastation. It's starting to feel like this is all just a simulation. With sky painted on the ceiling in plastic vegetation. We're all looking for something with meaning. What it means to be a human. What it means to just be humans being. Question just echo, trapped in this sandcastle and needing to let go. Can anyone hear me now? Can anyone hear me now?
Yeah, it's a gorgeous song. All right, there's still somebody strange still talking in my mouth. I'll get used to this new voice, I guess. So let's see where we are. Oh, we're starting a whole new section. In fact, I think this is the last section, is it? I'm not sure. I think it is. I think it's the last section. So I think we're almost done with this book. So it'll be interesting to see what I do when we finish this book. But we don't have to worry about that yet because you know me. It'll take me weeks and weeks to get through these last pages. So we're starting, the heart is the self. And we're starting on page 91, the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. So the devotee asks, wait, let me change this. I think I want to see more of you guys. I'm basically looking at one person. Yeah, there's a few more of y'all. That's good. And a tail. Okay, here we go. Sri Bhagavan speaks of the heart as the seat of consciousness and as identical with the self. What does the heart exactly signify? Ramana Maharshi. The question about the heart arises because you are interested in seeking the source of consciousness. To all deep thinking minds, the inquiry about the I and its nature has irresistible fascination. Call it by any name, God, self, the heart, or the seat of consciousness. It is all the same. The point to be grasped is this. The heart means the very core of one's being, the center, without which there is nothing whatever. And one thing I have noticed in the past is that when reading quotes from Ramana Maharshi with the word heart in it, sometimes people misunderstand those quotes. And the reason they misunderstand the quotes is because of a misunderstanding about what the heart is. The heart is the core. The heart is the root. The heart is the source. When Ramana Maharshi uses the word heart, he is referring to what I call the first principle of God. And of course, most people don't know that. And so they interpret the quotes in a large number of ways. When Ramana Maharshi uses the word heart, he is referring to the absolute. So that's why he says here, call it by any name, God, self, the heart, or the seat of consciousness, it is all the same. The point to be grasped is this, that heart means the very core of one's being, the center, without which there is nothing whatever. And another thing I really like about his answer, and in fact, one of the things I was doing just before I came here to teach was I was reading Seven Steps journals in the forum. And there were a few people who, as they're contemplating the quotes in the last couple of days, kind of mentioned this in their own way. But here's what Ramana Maharshi says. To all deep thinking minds, the inquiry about the I and its nature has an irresistible fascination. And what people were saying in their own way was, basically there's something in them that's calling them to do this. You know, and that came up for a few people in the last couple of days. There's something in them, right? There's something in them that's calling them to do this. And I made a comment on one person's post. I said, yeah, we don't have as much choice about this as we think we do. the idea that we have a choice really is mere imagination. We don't really have much of a choice about this. And so again, that's what he's saying here. To all deep thinking minds, the inquiry about the I and its nature has an irresistible, hear that? You can't actually resist it. An irresistible fascination. So the devotee says, but Sri Bhagavan has specified, I knew there were some things in this particular chapter I didn't love. We're getting into one of them now. But Sri Bhagavan has specified a particular place for the heart within the physical body, that it is in the chest, two digits from the right of the median. And I have certainly seen Ramana Maharshi answer questions like this before, but you know, you've probably heard me comment on this before, even in this very thin book. And if we were reading talks by Ramana Maharshi, which is a very thick book, you'd hear me comment on it many, many times. Ramana Maharshi's teachings are not always really his deepest teachings. In fact, sometimes I don't even get the feeling he's teaching at all. Sometimes I actually kind of get the feeling he's just saying what this person wants to hear. You know, and that's all. And you all know there's that one quote that Michael Langford always quotes about how the sage is the mirror, and that he is often just reflecting back the foolish thoughts of the questioner, and those thoughts are mistaken to be his. So maybe that's what's going on. But certainly there are times when Ramana Maharshi is answering a question. You know, just like I hear this strange voice talking today out of this mouth, you know, it comes out in his voice, but it's not his teaching. You know, and anyone who knows his teaching really well knows that's not his teaching. But there are some people who don't know the difference between his teaching and other teachings that come out of his mouth. And so certainly there have been teachings when people have asked him where the heart is, where he points to the heart. Let's see, what is it here? This is his exact description. Two digits to the right or something like that. Says, this is the heart. Oops, you can't see me. This is the heart. And even I've even seen him say, you know, that's why, and I guess in India, when people say me, they go me right here, me. He says, that's why people say me, because that's the heart. But I think that teaching is very similar to Eckhart's inner body. It gives the person a place to focus. It's a beginning point. And in fact, my sensation, like if you were to ask Regina Dawn Akers, where is the spiritual heart? And I was going to give you an answer that was within the body, I would tell you it's right in the middle of the chest. And I would tell you that it has rays that go out this way and underneath the arms and occasionally up into the throat. Why would I tell you that? Because when my heart chakra opened, that's what it felt like, you know? So that's how I would describe it. But I don't have any misconceptions, even though we talk about going within. I don't have any misconceptions that the self, the true self, is actually located somewhere in the body. That would make the true self very, very small, right? It'd be this very tiny little thing located somewhere in the body. But sometimes turning our attention within a certain place into the body and focusing on those sensations that we may feel, whether it's the center of the chest, the right, the left, the gut, it's irrelevant to me. If there's a place where you go in and you close your eyes and it feels very peaceful, that can be a helpful beginning, right? That can help quiet the mind as you pay attention to that. So again, this devotee must have heard some teaching like that before, because he's asking, you know, where Bhagavan just gave him the real answer, right? The real answer is that the heart is the source of everything, right? That's Ramana Maharshi's real teaching. But then, you know, like these questioners often do, he comes back, but, you know, but you said, right? You said, you have specified a particular place for the heart within the physical body, that it is in the chest, two digits to the right from the median, right? Two digits, I'm doing my digits here, two digits to the right of the median. So Ramana Maharshi says, yes, that is the center of spiritual experience according to the testimony of sages. But I think that first sentence is saying, that's not my teaching. Right, that's what's written down in books somewhere. Yeah, if you want to hear that, I can share that with you. Yes, that is the center of spiritual experience according to the testimony of sages. This spiritual heart center is quite different from the blood-propelling muscular organ known by the same name. The spiritual heart center is not an organ of the body. All that you can say of the heart is that it is the very core of your being, that with which you are really identical. Whether you are awake, asleep, or dreaming, whether you are engaged in work or immersed in samadhi. So, you know, again, there was one sentence there, and of course what followed that sentence, but one sentence in particular that was really his teaching. He says, all that you can say of the heart is that it is the very core of your being, that with which you are really identical. Right? So again, he's telling you what he means by the word heart. He's talking about the true self, the source, the absolute, the first principle of God, the supreme. You know, he tends to use the word heart to refer to that. So although some people may want to try and find it in the body, where's this place where I can focus my attention in the body? And again, that may be a good starting point, because focusing on sweet sensations can really quiet the mind. But that's only a small starting point. The seeking for who I am goes far beyond any sensations within the body. Another thing that's kind of dangerous about these teachings is that, again, I mentioned, you know, Ramana Maharshi said, of course, according to sages, it's two digits to the right of the center, right? But for me, when I feel those wonderful sensations, I feel them right in the center. You know, what if you happen to feel them on the left or slightly below the center, more like below the breast line? I mean, you know, a lot of people will then sit there when they hear these kinds of teachings and they're like, I feel it, you know, I'm going to turn this screen for a minute. I feel it here, but Ramana says it's supposed to be here. There must be something wrong with me, you know? And those things are actually irrelevant. So it's really important to listen to what Ramana Maharshi is trying to really say, right? All that you can say of the heart is that it is the very core of your being, that with which you are really identical, right? It has nothing to do with anything inside the body. Whether, and listen to this part, this is also great. Whether you are awake, asleep, or dreaming, whether you are engaged in work or immersed in samadhi, it doesn't matter. This is what you actually are. Yeah, that's pretty important to hear. It's interesting how people can hear what sages are saying or not hear what sages are saying. You know, I remember Jesus used to always say, for those who have ears to hear. Remember that? For those who have ears to hear. Because so many people can listen to the exact same words and then walk away, you know, walk away from what we just heard and say, oh yeah, Ramana Maharshi says the heart is two digits to the right of the center. You know, you're wrong. It's not in the middle of the chest. it's over to the right, you know. So it's really important that when we're listening to a sage, or what we often do, read and contemplate a sage, it's really important that we are willing to let go of all preconceived ideas that we have. Because if we have preconceived ideas, we will find what we want to see in the sage's words rather than hearing what they're actually saying. In fact, when I wrote NTI, that was exactly my instructions. My instructions were, when I read the Bible, if I thought I understood it, the first thing I had to do was let go of everything I thought I understood. I had to be an empty slate. And then once I was an empty slate, then an interpretation would come in, right? So I could not have written NTI if I had seen something in words, thought I understood it, and thought I knew what it meant. I couldn't have written NTI. I had to be completely open and sure of my unknowing, even if my mind thought it knew. I had to be completely open and sure of my unknowing. And that's the best way to contemplate the words of the sages too. Because otherwise you might write your meaning. I mean, this is exactly what Gentle Healing One is kind of learning now, right? About how we create the meaning. You might write your meaning on the words rather than seeing what the words are actually telling you. I've had someone comment, about how they love Nisargadatta because he's so simple. And I think there might have been a comment about how some of the previous sages were difficult. Certainly, Ramana Maharshi in the Seven Steps, and even in this, Ramana Maharshi can be very difficult to understand. Muru Ganar can be very difficult to understand. But that's good. Because if you think you understand it easily, you read it too quickly, you go with what you think you understand, right? And you might be missing what's really there. So it's good that they're difficult to understand. Because then you can say to yourself, I don't know what this means. And you can really open up, sure of your not knowing, and find out what's really written there. So, next the devotee says, in that case, so he must have heard what Ramana Maharshi really said about it being the very core of your being, that with which you are really identical, whether you are awake, asleep, or dreaming, whether you are engaged in work or immersed in samadhi, because the devotee says, in that case, how can it be localized in any part of the body? Fixing a place for the heart would imply setting physiological limitations to that which is beyond space and time. And Ramana Maharshi says, that's right. So he heard him. That's right. But the person who puts the question about the position of the heart considers himself as existing with or in the body. While putting the question now, would you say that your body alone is here, that you are speaking from somewhere else? No, you accept your bodily existence. It is from this point of view that any reference to a physical body comes to be made. Right? So again, when I'm talking to someone who believes their body and they're looking for something to focus on, some place to focus on within the body, I give them a place to go. But then he continues. Truly speaking, pure consciousness is indivisible. It is without parts. It has no form and shape, no within and without. And that's important too. Again, the ego mind can take advantage of this and just confuse us. But it's really important, because even though we say, and we will continue to say, and probably teachers for millennia will continue to say, close your eyes and go within. In reality, there's no within. But somehow that's the direction that we start drilling in anyway, right? You close your eyes to let go of all distractions. You focus your attention and you begin to seek, what am I? What am I? But it actually doesn't take too long, in my humble opinion, to begin to notice that the body is within you, right? When your eyes are closed and you aren't confused by sight, because sight can be very confusing. When your eyes are closed and you're not confused by sight, you can feel the sensations from the top of your head, your face, your hands, maybe your buttocks against the chair, your feet. And you can, oh yes, my heart. That center of the heart is now screaming, let me play too. So yeah, and the heart, who wants to play this sensation game? When you close your eyes and you let the body wake up and sing, the armpits are now playing. It doesn't take long to notice, if you're really paying attention, that from the top of the head to the bottom of your feet, to the extremities of the shoulders and the hands and everything in between. It's all within awareness. You can see it. It's inside of awareness. It's not outside. So it's funny, you go within and then you notice everything is within you. So if you go within and then what you find is that everything is within you, you can't really say there's such a thing as an inside or an outside. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to keep right on telling people to go within, right? Because when the eyes are open, at least for most people, some people can meditate quite well with the eyes open. But for most people, when the eyes are open, the brain is registering apparent distance, which isn't real, by the way, but it's registering apparent distance. It's registering different things, and it's much more difficult, more challenging for most people to get that sense of everything is within awareness. But when the eyes are closed and you're dealing with sensations and then with sounds, you know, no matter how far away a sound sounds, you know, you can hear a train blocks away and notice that's within awareness, right? So it's really helpful to close your eyes and go within, but when you go within, you start to notice there's no inside and there's no outside. So again, Ramana Maharshi says, truly speaking, pure consciousness is indivisible. It is without parts. It has no form and shape, no within and without. So I want to do another part of this sentence. I went straight to the within and the without. Actually, it's the previous sentence, but I didn't concentrate on this, and I'd like to go back and do that. He says, truly speaking, pure consciousness is indivisible. It is without parts. All right, I'm going to find a picture to show you guys. Let me go to my phone here. Find a nice photo. Oh, here's a pretty good photo. Oh, I like that photo too, though. I want to go to this photo. I think it's better for the demonstration. Okay, can you guys see this photo? What you're looking at is a photo of my boyfriend, Ron. This week was our 28th anniversary together. And he's a very picky eater. He only eats, I swear, like 10 things. But he wanted to do something special for our 28th. So he took me to an Indian restaurant, and that's why I took a picture of it, because it's Ron eating Indian food, which, you know, may never happen again for our 28th. But if you look at this picture, let me get in a little closer. You know, you can see Ron. It looks like there's some shamrocks hanging on the wall behind him, right? Because it's March and we have St. Patrick's Day. He has a red napkin. If I could get in close enough, I don't know if I can, you can see that he's different food items on his plate. It's hard to make it out what those food items are. But you see a glass of water, my glass of water, my plate. You can see my food a little better. You can see some dal there. There's some red chicken. There's some cucumbers with yogurt, meatballs, rice. You know, looks like, I don't know what this bottle is on the edge. It probably had flowers in it or something. So do you guys agree that it appears to be a lot of things there? My napkin with my fork. But if you really just shift your attention a little bit, what you'll notice is you're looking at one picture. There aren't really parts. Right? The brain can separate out the parts, but really this is just one photograph. Do you agree? You're looking at one thing. You can look at the world around you in the exact same way. You know, you could say, oh, there's a lamp. I have a tree in here. There's a tree. There's a picture of Jasmine. There's a love seat. They can't even say there's Ron's love seat because that's where he always sits. But if you kind of just relax all of that back a little bit, you're really just looking at one thing. There's not a true separation. The mind can separate. But there's not a true separation between the love seat and the table and the tree. You know, just like in that photograph, there wasn't. Let me show you the other photograph quickly that I loved that I didn't show you because I didn't think it was as good of a symbol for this. But this is Spot and Ginger. Spot is part donkey, part zebra. Can you see his stripes? But look at his head. He's a donkey. See? And then Ginger is his very jealous companion because Spot gets all the attention. But if you look, I mean, I can tell you this is Spot. There's Spot's stripes. There's Spot's donkey head. And we've got different parts even with Spot, right? There's his zebra body and his donkey head. And that's Ginger, the jealous companion. And of course, you can see the snow behind them. But again, it's one picture. You see? It's just one image, one picture. There aren't really parts there. It's the mind that's separating out those parts. So Ramana Maharshi says, truly speaking, pure consciousness is indivisible. It is without parts. It has no form and shape. No within and without. There is no right or left. You know, you guys know right or left are just made up things that you learned. There is no right or left for it. Pure consciousness, which is the heart, includes all, and nothing is outside or apart from it. That is the ultimate truth. From this absolute standpoint, the heart, self, or consciousness can have no particular place assigned to it in the physical body. And this is why Eckhart Tolle, I think it's in The Power of Now that he does this, but it could be in A New Earth. But again, I mentioned recently that he, near the beginning of the book, he talks about the inner body, which would be all those sensations that we feel when we close the eyes. And he teaches people to focus on the inner body. But then at the end of the exact same book, he says there's no inner body. And this is why. Because from the absolute standpoint, the heart, self, or consciousness can have no particular place assigned to it in the physical body. So if he left people, if Eckhart Tolle left people with that teaching that he started with, that there's an inner body, you know how the mind would interpret that? Like, that's my spirit. That's my soul. That's who I really am, right? That's, you guys know that, right? I'm not, right? You know, and so then we're limited to thinking we're sensations. So even though he uses the inner body to kind of get us started on focusing something other than thoughts in order to help quiet the mind, he also has to tell us there's no such thing as an inner body, or we'll misinterpret the self to have a locality. We'll misinterpret these nice sensations inside the body to be who I really am. And that's not the truth. From the absolute standpoint, the heart, self, or consciousness can have no particular place assigned to it in the physical body. What is the reason? The body is itself a mere projection of the mind, and the mind is but a poor reflection of the radiant heart. Now, again, one of the things we look at over and over again is that we have to be very, very careful about words. When Ramana Maharshi uses the word mind, he's referring to the what I call the second principle of God, right? The second principle of God projects the body. He's not talking about the thoughts that pass through your human mind, what we call the human mind. He says the body itself is a mere projection of the mind, and the mind, or the second principle of God, is but a poor reflection of the radiant heart. Now, what's really interesting about that particular sentence is he does say the mind, or the second principle of God, is a reflection of the heart. The heart being the source, the absolute. And again, we talked about this a little bit this morning. A Course in Miracles calls this way of seeing, this way of seeing when you've awakened to the second principle of God, it calls it the real world. Hear those words, real world. And it uses the words real world because it's a much better reflection of the absolute than the previous world, which was seen through the ego mind, right? But listen to the second thing. It's still a reflection, which means it's not it, right? It's a much better reflection. It's heading in the right direction, but it's still not it. So he says, from the absolute standpoint, the heart, self, or consciousness can have no particular place assigned to it in the physical body. What is the reason? The body is itself a mere projection of the mind, and the mind is but a poor reflection of the radiant heart. How can that in which everything is contained be itself confined as a tiny part within the physical body, which is but an infinitesimal, phenomenal manifestation of the one reality? I have before talked about how point of views are not true. And in fact, I've quoted Robert Adams when he says that every point of view is a wrong point of view, right? Well, today I was listening to Bentinho. I'm going through his Sedona experiment again. And he said, even the idea of localized consciousness is a point of view. Right? It's a point of view. When you think, you know, we once did an experiment with a man named, what was his name? I can't think of his name right now, but it was a little video that I showed you in Gentle Healing Year One. And what he asks you to do is to notice first whether awareness, whether it feels like awareness is in the top half of the body or the bottom half of the body. He asks you to draw a line across your waistline and then look, is awareness in the top half of the body or the bottom half of the body? And nearly everyone says the top half of the body. And then he has you draw another line, like, you know, maybe right below the shoulders. And he asks you, is awareness in below this line? You know, you're only dealing with the top half of the body now. Is it below this line or above this line? And a few people, very emotional types, will actually choose below the line. Most people, however, choose above the line. And that's where the video continues, because that's where most people go. So he asks you then to cut like right here. So you're dealing with this area to this area and up here, the head. And again, where is awareness? And most people then pick the head. But then he starts asking you, it starts getting a little trickier, because he starts asking you to do things like cut across your face right here. Where is awareness? Most people pick the top part of the head. Okay, so awareness is up here. And then he asks you to cut right here. Which side is awareness in? Right? And then he asks you to make another cut. And pretty soon people start realizing this idea that awareness was up here is just an idea. You know, that as they keep following his little dissections, they start noticing, but wait a minute, you know, it can't be true. It can't be there. I mean, I can't be localized right here if that's where I thought it was. Like, if that's not true, as he keeps cutting and cutting and cutting, they start to realize their perception of where awareness was has to be wrong, because they can't actually localize it in one little piece. And yet we walk around with the belief that somehow awareness is inside this body. That somehow this body is primary. This body was born. And like awareness went into the body. And when this body dies, awareness leaves the body. You'll hear even spiritual people say that all the time. They call it sometimes the spirit. They'll say the spirit left the body. But when you say the spirit left the body, what you're really saying is there's a belief that it was inside this body. Localized, right inside here, somewhere, you know, somewhere. And I heard Bentinho say, that is just a point of view. I thought, that's brilliant. You know, those words to me were just brilliant. First of all point of views are wrong. And secondly, you and me and a couple other people can argue about where that localized point is if we wanted to. Why can we argue? Because it's not there. Right? It's not there. We just have a point of view where we imagine it to be, and we never question our imagining. And if you look very closely at whatever you imagine it to be, if you still imagine it to be somewhere in the body, whether it's the heart or whether it's the head, what you'll really notice is that, again, you're just looking at sensations. You're saying these sensations are awareness. Okay, well, let's say that for a moment, just for a moment. Just like Eckhart Tolle says, for a moment, there's an inner body. Let's say for a moment that these sensations in the, you know, in the front of the head, at least that's where I experience it. Where do you guys experience the strongest focal point of awareness when you look for it? For me, it's the front of the head. So let's just imagine for a moment that I'm looking at this. I'm arguing with you all. I can feel it. Awareness is right here. Well, the next question really is, what's aware of this idea of awareness right here? What's aware of this feeling of awareness right here? And where is that located? Right? It doesn't take too much genuine self-inquiry to find out that if you think awareness is located somewhere in the body or consciousness or the self, however you want to word it, that that's not true. That's just a belief. That's just a point of view, right? And if you really look, that point of view just goes away because there's something here, something that I can't find located in the body that's aware of this sensations here, which I was a moment ago arguing with you was awareness, if we were arguing. So again, from this absolute standpoint, the heart, self, or consciousness can have no particular place assigned to it in the physical body. What is the reason? The body itself is a mere projection of the mind, and the mind is but a poor reflection of the radiant heart. How can that, in which everything is contained, be itself confined as a tiny part within the physical body, which is but an infinitesimal phenomenal manifestation of the one reality? And then Ramana Maharshi says, but people do not understand this. They cannot help thinking in terms of the physical body and the world. For instance, you say, I have come to this ashram all the way from my country beyond the Himalayas. But that is not the truth. Where is a coming or going or any movement whatever for the one all-pervading spirit which you really are? And I've told you this story before, but maybe not everybody's heard it, or maybe you've forgotten it. So I'll tell you this story again. I was on my way somewhere, probably India. It seems like it was that long ago, probably on my way to India. And I was in the Houston airport. I had flown from Colorado Springs to Houston. No, I was alone, so I couldn't have been going to India. I was going somewhere. Who cares where I was going? Somewhere. But I'm in the Houston airport, which is not where I started. And I'm sitting there in the Houston airport, just kind of hanging out. Oh, it's the day Prince died. I remember that clearly because everybody was talking about that. Prince died. So wherever I was going, the day Prince died. So I'm sitting there in the airport, and there's this woman sitting in a chair, a Cuban woman, with her daughter. Her daughter's sitting on the floor playing with a doll or something. And the daughter's probably about 3, maybe 4. You know, she's pretty young. And she looks up at the mama and smiles, and I can't remember what she said now, but she said something about here in Cuba, you know, here in Cuba. And her mom bent over and told her, you know, we're not in Cuba anymore. We got on an airplane, and now we're in Houston, Texas. And the look on the girl's face, at least what it communicated to me, was she could not fathom the idea. Because the I had not changed. It had been with her the whole time. right? I mean, how could I be someplace else? I'm unchanged. And it was just amazing to me how at that age, in that innocence, she was much more aware of the unchanging self that couldn't go from one place to another. It's just always here. And her mother was totally focused on the world and the bodies and the getting on the plane and blah, blah, blah. But the child was like, how could that be? You know, how could that be? So again, Ramana Maharshi is saying, people do not understand this. They cannot help thinking in terms of the physical body and the world. For instance, you say, I have come to this ashram all the way from my country beyond the Himalayas. But that is not the truth. Where is a coming or going or any movement whatever for the one all-pervading spirit which you really are? I mean, pay attention to that. You know, as you get up and go into another room, you know, I mean, sure, the body goes into another room, but notice there's not a single flicker or change in the self, in awareness. Wherever the body is for now, awareness is, and it isn't moving. Right? It isn't moving. And when you get the sense of the body being within awareness, right? Even though the legs are moving and you're going from one room to another room, there's no moving happening because the body is always right here within awareness. You know, you can't find awareness moving from one location to another. And the bigger, for lack of better words, awareness gets for you, the more you see that that's true. But if you have this belief that awareness is localized here, you know, in the forehead somewhere or the top of the head or behind the eyes, then you imagine that awareness is moving around from one room to another room. But all you have to do is pause and look. You know, the best way to describe awareness is here. Right? Always here. That here never changes. And that's what that little girl couldn't understand. You know, how could we have left Cuba and come to a place called Houston? I mean, she didn't have the words for it, but she only knew the here-ness. It didn't go anywhere. In fact, Ramana Maharshi's next line is, you are where you have always been. It is your body that has moved or was conveyed from place to place till it reached this ashram, right? You are where you've always been. And for now, we'll call that here. It's kind of funny mixing words of location and words of time. No, that would be now. It's always now too. Yeah, always here, always now, right? This is the simple truth, but to a person who considers himself a subject living in an objective world, it appears as something altogether visionary. It is by coming down to the level of ordinary understanding that a place is assigned to the heart in the physical body. So he's saying, when I tell someone that the heart is here, I'm just reaching them where they're at. I'm helping them from where they're at. Again, same reason that Eckhart Tolle talks about the inner body for a while. Just helping people where they're at. The devotee says, how then shall I understand Sri Bhagavan's statement that the experience of the heart center is at a particular place in the chest? Ramana Maharshi says, once you accept that from the true and absolute standpoint, the heart as pure consciousness is beyond space and time, it will be easy for you to understand the rest in its correct perspective. And I'll tell you what that's like. That's like, how can I answer questions about Santa Claus to a child. Because I understand the child's perspective because I used to have it. But I remember when I believed in Santa Claus, I remember wanting to believe in Santa Claus. I didn't want that bubble burst yet, right? And so when I ask as a child, well, how does Santa get down the chimney when he's so fat? If somebody gives me an answer, even though it's completely untrue, that I can accept, it allows me to continue that fantasy a little longer that I want to continue. You know, once you're an adult, you can talk to children without getting confused. But a child asking another child who also believes in Santa, you know, how does this big fat man get in some of these chimneys, which are really tiny? Ooh, that's very, I'm not sure how that, you know, I can feel the confusion in my head. I'm not sure how, you know, my thought system is being threatened and I'm getting all contracted, even though I'm 7 years old, right? So one child would have a difficulty answering that question to another child, but an adult can answer it in complete clarity because the adult doesn't believe the story, but the adult sees the desire to believe the story, and the adult is able to allow the child to believe the story, right? So Rama Maharshi can do the same thing. He can see when people aren't ready for the truth, and he can you know, allow them to believe their story a little longer, that they're a body, and he can give them a place in the body to focus their attention if that's what they're asking for. That's not hard to do. This idea of always telling the truth. Now, again, you have to be self-honest with yourself if you're on a spiritual path. And I'm not talking about lying to people in a worldly way, like, you know, lying to your wife about where you were last night. I'm not talking about that. But this idea that you have to always tell the truth is not completely right. You know, when you're talking to a person who is very, very upset because their spouse just died, you don't need to tell them, you know, that within consciousness, nothing has really happened. The absolute self has never been affected. I mean, it's just, you don't have to go there. You don't have to tell the truth all the time. It's not compassionate. It's much more compassionate just to listen to the person, to say, oh, I'm so sorry. And unless you've lost a spouse, you really shouldn't even say, I know how you feel, because they know that's not true. You just say, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't imagine how you feel. Oh, is there anything I can do? Just sit with them, be with them. But, you know, a lot of people have trouble with that. You know why? It's just like how one child can't answer the question of another child about how can Santa go down these little chimneys. A person who doesn't know the truth is very uncomfortable with death, right? Very uncomfortable with death, very uncomfortable with suffering. And so when someone is suffering, they try to just say things to hurry up and make that person get over the suffering, because it makes them feel better, right? But someone who knows the truth can allow the choice for suffering. Just like you can allow a child to believe in Santa Claus. There's no need to interfere with that choice. So Ramana Maharshi says, once you accept that from the true and absolute standpoint, the heart as pure consciousness is beyond space and time, it will be easy for you to understand the rest in its correct perspective. And again, the question is, well, how shall I understand the fact that you tell people it's in the body? And he's saying, once you're awake, you'll understand how we sometimes might tell people that it's in the body when there is no body. You know, you'll understand that. There's no need to bust somebody else's bubble. You can let the children play their games. And, you know, the inner wisdom, you know, what many people from A Course in Miracles call the Holy Spirit, it's just like that. The Holy Spirit doesn't come blasting into your mind, blowing away your illusions. Only when you show interest in having your illusions dismantled does it dismantle your illusions, right? Only when you turn your attention that way, then it steps forward and helps you. But otherwise, you can hold on to every single illusion that you want to hold on to. The Holy Spirit has no need to come in and tell you the truth if you don't want to know it. And I think that I shouldn't go any further because we have 4 minutes left and the next answer is very long. So I think I'll just fold down the page and we will stop right there. And let me just find another song. This band Wookiefoot, I just discovered today. I haven't listened to all their songs, so I don't know what this next song I'm going to play is going to say. But let's just pick another Wookiefoot song. I don't know. Don't Hold Your Breath. Let's listen to Don't Hold Your Breath with Wookiefoot. Good. So I will let go of the mic for a second. And then when Don gives it back, I'll begin our quarterly member meeting.